12. As soon as I'd packed my duffel, the guest room already looked like no one had ever stayed there. My absence quickly absorbed, which was maybe the point of rooms like that. I'd figured Tamar and my father had already left for work, but when I came into the living room, my father grunted from the couch. "Tamar's buying orange juice, or some stupid thing," he said. We sat together and watched television. Tamar was gone a long time. My father kept rubbing his freshly shaven jaw, his face seeming undercooked. The commercials embarrassed me with their strident feeling, how they seemed to mock our awkward quiet. My father's nervous measurement of the silence. How I would have been a month ago, tense with expectation, dredging my life for some gem of experience to present to him. But I couldn't summon that effort anymore. My father was both more knowable to me than he had ever been, and at the same time, more of a stranger. He was just a man, sensitive to spicy foods, guessing at his foreign markets, plugging away at his French. He stood up the moment he heard Tamar's keys fussing in the door. "We should have left 30 minutes ago," he said. Tamar glanced at me, re-shouldered her purse. "Sorry." She cut him a tight smile. "You knew when we had to go," he said. "I said I was sorry." She seemed for a moment genuinely sorry, but then her eyes drifted helplessly to the television, still on, and though she tried to click back to attention, I knew my father had noticed. "You don't even have any orange juice," he said, his voice flickering with hurt. A young couple was the first to pick me up. The girl's hair was the color of butter, a blouse knotted at her waist, and she kept turning to smile and offer me pistachios from a bag, kissing the boy so I could see her darting tongue. I hadn't hitchhiked before, not really. It made me nervous to have to be whatever strangers expected from a girl with long hair. I didn't know what degree of outrage to show about the war, how to talk about the students who threw bricks at police or took over passenger planes, demanding to be flown to Cuba. I'd always been outside all that, like I was watching a movie about what should have been my own life. But it was different now that I was heading to the ranch. I kept imagining the moment when Tamar and my father, home from the office, would realize I was actually gone. They would understand slowly, Tamar probably coming to the conclusion faster than my father. The apartment empty, no trace of my things. And maybe my father would call my mother. But what could either of them do? What punishment could they possibly pass down? They didn't know where I'd gone. I had moved beyond their purview. Even their concern was exciting in its way. There would be a moment when they'd have to wonder why I'd left. Some murky guilt rising to the surface. And they would have to feel the full force of it, even if it was only for a second. The couple took me as far as Woodside. I waited in the parking lot of the Calmart until I got a ride from a man in a ratty Chevrolet on his way to Berkeley to drop off a motorcycle part. Every time he went over a pothole, his duct-taped glove compartment clattered. The shaggy trees flashed past the window, thick with sun. The purple stretch of the bay beyond. I held my purse on my lap. His name was Claude, and he seemed ashamed of how it jarred with his appearance.
"My mother liked that French actor," he mumbled.
Claude made a point of flipping through his wallet, showing me pictures of his own daughter. She was a chubby girl, the bridge of her nose pink, her unfashionable sausage curls. Claude seemed to sense my pity, suddenly grabbing the wallet back.
"None of you girls should be doing this," he said.
He shook his head, and I saw how his face moved a little with concern for me. An acknowledgement, I thought, of how brave I was. Though I should have known that when men warn you to be careful, often they are warning you of the dark movie playing across their own brains. Some violent daydream prompting their guilty exhortations to make it home safe.
See, I wish I'd been like you, Claude said, free and easy, just traveling around. I always had a job.
He slid his eyes to me before turning them back to the road. The first twinge of discomfort. I'd gotten good at deciphering certain male expressions of desire, clearing the throat, and assessing nip in the gaze.
None of you people ever work, huh?
He said. He was teasing, probably, but I couldn't tell for sure. There was sourness in his tone, a sting of real resentment. Maybe I should have been frightened of him. This older man who saw that I was alone, who felt like I owed him something, which was the worst thing a man like that could feel. But I wasn't afraid. I was protected, a hilarious and untouchable giddiness overtaking me. I was going back to the ranch. I would see Suzanne. Claude seemed barely real to me, a paper clown, innocuous and laughable.
This good? Claude said.
He'd pulled over near the campus in Berkeley, the clock tower and stair-step houses thickening the hills behind. He turned off the ignition. I felt the heat outside, the close wind of traffic. Thanks, I said, gathering my purse and duffel.
Slow down, he said, as I started to open the door. Just sit with me a second, hm?
I sighed, but sat back in the seat. I could see the dry hills above Berkeley and remembered, with a start, that brief time in winter when the hills were green and plump and wet. I hadn't even known Suzanne then. I could feel Claude looking at me sideways.
Listen, Claude scratched at his neck. If you need some money...
I don't need money. I was unafraid, shrugging a quick goodbye and opening the door. Thanks again, I said, for the ride.
Wait, he said, grabbing my wrist.
Fuck off, I said, wrenching my arm away from the bracelet of his grasp, an unfamiliar heat in my voice. Before I slammed the door, I saw Claude's weak and sputtering face. I was walking away, breathless, almost laughing. The sidewalk radiating even heat, the pulse of the abrupt sunshine. I was buoyed by the exchange, as if suddenly allowed more space in the world.
Bitch!
Claude called. But I didn't turn back to look. Telegraph was packed. People selling tables of incense or concho jewelry. Leather purses hung from an alley fence. The city of Berkeley was redoing all the roads that summer, so piles of rubble collected on the sidewalks. Trenches cracking through the asphalt like a disaster movie. A group in floor-length robes fluttered pamphlets at me. Boys with no shirts, their arms pressed with faint bruising, looked me up and down. Girls my age lugged carpet bags that banged against their knees, wearing velvet frock coats in the August heat. Even after what had happened with Claude, I wasn't afraid of hitchhiking. Claude was just a harmless floater in the corner of my vision, drifting peacefully into the void. Tom was the sixth person I approached, tapping his shoulder as he ducked into his car. He seemed flattered by my request for a ride, like it was an excuse I'd made up to be near him. He hurriedly brushed off the passenger seat, raining silent crumbs onto the carpet.
It could be cleaner, he said.
Apologetic, as if I might possibly be picky. Tom drove his small Japanese car at exactly the speed limit, looking over his shoulder before changing lanes. His plaid shirt was thinning at the elbows, but clean and tucked, a boyishness to his slim wrists that moved me. He took me all the way to the ranch, though it was an hour from Berkeley. He'd claimed to be visiting friends at the junior college in Santa Rosa, but he was a bad liar. I could see his neck get pink. He was polite, a student at Berkeley, pre-med, though he liked sociology too, and history. LBJ, he said. Now there was a president. He had a large family, I learned, and a dog named Sister, and too much homework. He was in summer school, trying to get through prereqs. He'd asked me what my major was. His mistake excited me. He must have thought I was 18, at least. I don't go to college, I said. I was about to explain I was only in high school, but Tom immediately got defensive. I was thinking of doing that, too, he said, dropping out. But I'm going to finish the summer classes. I already paid fees. I mean, I wish I hadn't, but... He trailed off, gazing at me until I realized he wanted my forgiveness. That's a bummer, I said, and this seemed like enough. He cleared his throat. So, do you have a job or something, if you're not in school? He said. Gee, unless that's a rude question. You don't have to answer. I shrugged, affecting ease. Though maybe I was feeling easy on that car ride, like my occupation of the world could be seamless. These simple ways I could meet needs, talking to strangers, dealing with situations. The place I'm going now, I've been staying there, I said. It's a big group. We take care of each other. His eyes were on the road, but he was listening closely as I explained the ranch. The funny old house, the kids, the plumbing system Guy had rigged in the yard, a knotty mess of pipes. Sounds like the International House, he said, where I live. There are 15 of us. There's a chore board in the hall. We all take turns with the bad ones. Yeah, maybe, I said, though I knew the ranch was nothing like the International House. The squinty philosophy majors, arguing over who'd left the dinner dishes unwashed. A girl from Poland nibbling black bread and crying for a faraway boyfriend. Who owns the house? He said. Is it like a center or something? It was odd to explain Russell to someone. To remember that there were whole realms in which Russell or Suzanne did not figure. His album's going to come out around Christmas, probably. I remember saying. I kept talking about the ranch, about Russell. The way I tossed free Mitch's name, like Donna had that day on the bus, with studied, careful deployment. The closer we got, the more worked up I became, like horses that bolt with barn sickness, forgetting their rider. It sounds nice, Tom said. I could tell my stories had charged him, a dreamy excitement in his features, mesmerized by bedtime tales of other worlds. You could hang out for a while, I said, if you wanted. Tom brightened at the offer, gratitude making him shy. Only if I'm not intruding, he said, a blush clotting his cheeks. I imagined Suzanne and the others would be happy with me for bringing this new person, expanding the ranks, all the old tricks, a pie-faced admirer to raise his voice with ours and contribute to the food pool. But it was something else, too, that I wanted to extend. The taut and pleasant silence in the car, the stale heat raising vapors of leather, the warped image of myself in the side mirrors, so I caught only the quantity of hair, the freckled skin of my shoulder. I took on the shape of a girl. The car crossed the bridge, passing through the shit-stench veil of the landfill. I could see the span of another distant highway, sighted by water, and the marshy flats before the sudden drop into the valley, the ranch hidden in its hills. By that time, the ranch I'd known was a place that no longer existed. The end had already arrived. each interaction its own elegy. But there was too much hopeful momentum in me to notice. The leap in me when Tom's car had first turned down the ranch drive. It had been 2 weeks, not long at all, but the return was overwhelming. And only when I saw everything still there, still alive and strange and half-dreamy as ever, did I understand I'd worried it might be gone. The things I loved, the miraculous house, like the one in Gone with the Wind, I'd realized, coming upon it again. The silty rectangle of pool half full, with its team of algae and exposed concrete. It could all pass back into my possession. As Tom and I walked from the car, I had a flash of hesitation, noticing how Tom's jeans were too clean. Maybe the girls would tease him. Maybe it had been a bad idea to invite him along. I told myself it would be fine. I watched him, absorbing the scene. I read his expression as impressed, though he must have been noticing the disrepair, the junked-out skeletons of cars, the crispy package of a dead frog drifting on the surface of the pool. But these were details that no longer seemed notable to me, like the sores on Nico's legs that stuck with bits of gravel. My eyes were already habituated to the texture of decay, so I thought that I had passed back into the circle of light.